transmission.
Hello and welcome, adventurers, to the Season 1 breakdown of Dungeon Radio Hour, a special episode where we answer all the burning questions you have about the twists, turns, and loop-de-loops our cast went through during the course of Season 1. I'm Dalton Ruscher Riddle, and joining me, as always, is the cast of Dungeon Radio Hour. Introduce yourselves, cast!
I'm Michael Adair.
I'm Alyssa Adair.
And I'm Andrew Gerline.
And on behalf of everyone here at DRH, we want to thank all of you again for listening. We're so excited to be able to break down our first season with all of you. But before we get into your questions from you, that's right, the fans of Dungeon Radio Hour, I want to go on record and say that if you're not caught up with season one, then turn this off now! I mean it. Don't listen to us. Plug your ears. Scream into the abyss until you can no longer hear our angelic voices.
Even if you have heard it, just scream. It's good to let off some steam if you're on your commute. You're probably listening to this during your commute. Good old scream.
You know what? Let's all have a collective scream on three.
Okay.
All right? I'm going to count back.
I think we're going to give some people heart attacks, okay?
Listen, no, I'm just very excited.
You're amped. I get it.
Screaming and all of that aside, now that that spoiler warning is out of the way, we get on to tonight's surprise guest. That's right, I have invited a very good friend of the show to come help us tonight because I simply refuse to host any longer.
He's
author
over it.
Of Session Zero, the DMG's Guide to Writing Great Campaigns in Any Setting, and the host of Dungeons, Dragons, and Psychology Podcast, I give you Robert Walker. Welcome, Robert.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello, friends. Now, I don't know that this is true, but I also don't know if there's a way to prove me wrong. I think I'm your very first fan, so thanks for having me here.
Yeah.
If you can prove that wrong, I didn't say that. You can edit that out later. But I don't think it's provable, so I'll just stick with it.
I like it. Let's stir controversy.
Yeah, even if it was provable, I wouldn't.
My
care.
Mom is my number one fan.
Well, okay, you can't count your parents, right? They're all of our number one fan. I'm just talking about from the beginning of the show, your first true fan. That's what
You're
I'm talking
mom,
about.
Robert.
I was like your first real fan. Parents have to love you. I don't have to love you. I just do love the show that you guys put on, and I think I was your first super fan. So that's all I'm saying.
I think that tracks.
Yes, and if you disagree with that, get in the comments and argue with Robert. He will take you on.
Yeah.
First and best.
First and best for sure.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to argue that point whatsoever.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys. This is awesome. I've been listening to your show since I think I was there when maybe episode 2 came out was when I first found you guys.
Wow. Right from the beginning.
And I remember early on when I first had Dalton and Andrew on my show, I was telling them that I was at that time making trips up and down a mountain canyon pass for work. And I said they needed to put a spoiler warning on the beginning of your show not to be driving in dangerous conditions while you were listening, because there were a few times that you guys had me laughing so freaking hard. I couldn't even see the road ahead of me. I had to pull over. I was like, oh my God, these guys are freaking incredible. So thank you for all that.
Robert, I notice you're missing an arm.
It didn't go well for me, but I kept listening to the show anyways.
And we'll Venmo you after the show for that glowing endorsement. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, Robert, I appreciate all of that. And we have brought you on tonight for the very thankless job of emceeing our Q&A for the breakdown of season number one. So thank you very much for being here.
Happy to do it. Very excited to be here. We have a lot of questions. We'll try and get to as many of them as we can. I also brought a few questions of my own that I didn't see on your list. You guys were already had some fans asking about things that I was interested in. So I got to scratch off those ones from my list. But I'll throw a couple of my own in there, maybe for a little curveball that you're not expecting.
Yeah, dude.
Ooh.
Nice. I like a curveball.
So I think the first one, because it's so fresh in everybody's mind, the big thing to talk about has got to be Jeff. The big reveal.
Yeah.
The big reveal. I have always advocated for a great plot twist in every game because they keep things interesting. And you guys delivered that. You had that moment of the great big plot twist. I was at work listening to my earbuds, and when it happened, I went, oh, shit. All of my coworkers turned and looked at me and were like, are you all right? I was like, no, it's all good. Just found out somebody was a bad guy.
Yes, dude.
I have a question before you ask us anything. You're obviously the number one fan. You're the first fan.
Oh, yeah.
Did
definitely.
Have any inkling whatsoever that Jeff was the BBEG or bad in any way?
So here's the funny thing. I know I've mentioned to you guys in the past that your campaign inspired me to include some of the characters in the campaign that I was running, which was also taking place in Faerun.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned that I'd used Honora and I had used Jeff and Slappy Parnassus, like a few of the very memorable characters. And I had Jeff doing the exact same things he was doing to your party. He was calling him on the sending stone. He was being super annoying, inviting him to karaoke, like all of the Jeffisms. And at one point, one of the players in my campaign said, if we don't eventually get to kill this fucking guy, I'm going to be so disappointed. And at that moment, I had a thought like, well, maybe he could be a bad guy just because he's so...
Yeah, in your world.
Yeah. So, organically. I love it.
Well, now you have to do you also have to do the Jeff voice.
My Jeff voice?
Yes,
your Jeff voice. If you have Jeff in your campaign, we got to hear it.
Hey, guys, it's Jeff here.
That's brilliant.
That's a better Jeff than I can do. So
that was rock
solid. That was good.
Oh, thank you.
I've been recast.
The greatest wizard in the realms.
Oh, my God.
Damn,
that's
good. That's
amazing.
That's
so
good. Yeah, Andrew, you're going to be replaced.
Yeah, stunt voice acting.
Yeah, there you go. In case it gets too confusing, jumping back and forth during some episodes.
Yeah, so, we'll bring you on just to do it.
So the question I have is, I think this one comes from the fans. It was also one that was on my list. But was Jeff always going to be the big bad guy? Or did you decide on that later? And if so, when did that decision happen?
So... to answer the first question as simply as I can, no. Jeff was not always destined to be the BBEG of season one of Dungeon Radio Hour. When I first set out to go into this campaign, and I think I talked about this a little bit on your show as well, Robert, is that the show had several different endings. And depending on the actions that Michaelis and Andrew took would dictate where I went with the story. When I first set out for season one of the show, they were going to fight Mad Mage straight from the source books of D&D. Like, that is who the BBEG was going to be.
Halaster the Mad.
Yeah. Good old, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of evolved into, okay, well, maybe it's going to be the story version of myself who has been possessed by the Mad Mage in some way. That'll be the BBEG that's going to end it all. And then probably 10 to 12 episodes in, I was like, what if it's just Jeff? And then as I started to like have that idea, some of the other story elements started to kind of trickle in. I was like, okay, let me see how I can weave all of this together to really make it make sense for Jeff to be the BBEG of the season. And I kept it in the dark from these guys from the get-go as well, because I did not want them to know what was happening. And as we went through the season, I would sprinkle little clues that you wouldn't realize were clues until after you knew that Jeff was the bad guy. So if you ever did go back for a re-listen, you're like, oh, I should have caught that. Oh, that makes sense now because of, you know, I now know A, B, and C.
Yeah, I think there was a couple points I noticed, especially when you were doing the recap episode, where people were discussing their master and that a name was never given. And there was always sort of this vague overarching who's the person above Aunt Honora and who's the person who's pulling the strings, who's the puppeteer, and hearing that played back, I was like, oh, okay, clever. I can see at least for a while it's been in the works.
So kind of going off of that and me knowing that I kept these guys in the dark for so long, I kind of want to hear their reactions of how they felt once they realized that Jeff was who he actually was, or, you know, maybe not who he said he was from the beginning.
I was blindsided because I overheard Dalton and Alyssa conspiring and just sending each other voice messages about it. And yeah, I had no idea we were going to have Jeff as like the BBEG or a villain at all. I thought he was just going to be this annoying foil, mainly to me, through this entire campaign, which I loved because I love Jeff as a character. I'm glad we got to fold him in.
Oh, yeah. I loved it because, like Dalton said, he kept us in the dark for a long, long time. It just got to a point, especially as we were getting to the end, because I do most of the editing. So that's when he finally kind of had to conspire with me just to make sure I'm, you know, not taking things out that need to be there. So we're just kind of going back and forth. So he did tell me, but he wasn't going to tell the boys. And yeah, Mike accidentally heard, which then became the funniest thing because then Andrew was the last one to find out. And he's the one playing Jeff. And we at one point forgot. I think at one point we were recording and me and Dalton said something. And Andrew's just like, what? And
we're like, yeah. Wait, it was on the group chat. You didn't... Dalton said something like, and at that point, we're going to start revealing that Jeff is the BBEG. And I privately messaged Dalton and I was like, did I read that right? Is Jeff the bad guy? And Dalton thought, yeah, I remember him saying he thought he told me. And then he said, well, we wanted to keep you in the dark as long as possible because we wanted you to play Jeff as earnestly as you could. And not kind of give away that he might be having evil plots. And I love that because it just, when you go back and listen to the show, it's not clear that he's the bad guy, but it totally is clear if you already know he's the bad guy, if you know what I mean. You can see it coming if you know it's coming. But if you don't, then it's a huge surprise. And on the Patreon, we have the Jeff cast, which that twist puts a lot of dark spin on a lot of the episodes of Jeff Cass. It makes them a lot more dark, knowing that he's dead serious about a lot of this stuff.
Interesting, yeah.
But when I was finally told, my jaw dropped, and then I then immediately laughed, because I was like, the best part about this is getting to hear the classic villain monologue in this voice. That's going to be the best part of this. Yes.
It is true. That was pretty great as he was explaining all of his plans and machinations and everything that he went through. To lead the party there. And I do love that the sincerity of his desire to still have them as friends never went away. Even with his reveal, like how many times he just kept going back to, we could still be friends. And it was, that's great.
Right. Well, I think that explains why he just never killed us. Cause he just was like,
right.
But also couldn't you just like rule with me? We could all be friends.
Right. Cause he so earnestly, especially wanting Mike's friendship, he so earnestly was so pestering about being friends with them that I didn't want it. And Dalton and I talked about it, we didn't want it to be that he was lying about all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like he actually meant it at the time he said it, and he still means it today. As long as if they would join the plan, they could all be best friend evil people together.
Absolutely.
So it was a great plot twist, which is a perfect segue to another question, which is, throughout the story, there have been a few plot twists. What has everyone's favorite moment been where they were surprised or the plot changed and went in a different direction, or even just when another player or DM did something you were not expecting to happen in the story?
Anita ate Tony. Why? We bring in this little character, granted, completely unplanned. It was only because Mike was like, let's bring an animal in here.
Yeah.
And then Dalton had to think up on the spot. And the little tongue thing, I was just dying when we were recording. I had to literally like pull away from the mic.
Alyssa and I were crying.
Yeah. Crying. This little stupid tongue thing. And then, but then the moment we say we're going to get an army of salamanders, he had to get eaten.
Yeah.
I couldn't make the story that easy.
Yeah. That was great.
But I loved it.
I'm trying to think of one. What other twist have we had? I don't remember what we've recorded or said or done.
What has our podcast been? But a serious answer would probably be Arnold. I don't know if that was planned by Dalton, but it very much felt like that was kind of a simple side questy kind of thing. The whole, it's a person being turned into a parrot. If that even was his plan, he could have just been giving us a talking parrot and then everything evolved. Who knows? I'm sure he'll tell us in a second, but not only that he was a person, but he also was related to the witch and related to Jeff and like piecing all those pieces together. That for me was great.
Yeah. Same here. That's my choice. My choice too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew the Jeff thing, but I didn't know that Arnold was his dad until maybe a night or two before we recorded, like, the reveal of that. So my mind was blown. I remember I got to work and I like was catching up on messages and I was in my car and I was like, "What the fuck? Arnold is his dad?" And then I was like, "Wait, of course he is, because he's married to the witch who's the sister." Like, and it mm-hmm. all just was like so obvious to me after the fact that it's been building to this.
Yeah, hindsight is definitely 20/20 there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it was so clear in hindsight. And it just, I like all day, I was like, God, what a good twist.
It made me
just love the Arnold storyline so much more because I realized just how much meaning it had and how much connection it had to the whole plot. He's not just a parrot that we are friends with anymore.
Yeah, so that is tragic.
Another question that's been asked by the listeners, Dalton, and it leads perfectly into that. Was Arnold always meant to be this integral to the plot?
No, he was not. So these guys know this, but Arnold was created out of a tweet that I found on the internet. I found it on Reddit specifically, and it was this user who was talking about, I'm going to buy a parrot and I'm going to teach it, you know, these phrases. And it was like, never trust a witch. I wish I had my hands. You know, I miss my kids, yada, yada. And I was like, that would be such a fun, like, animal companion to put in the story. And so for shits and gigs, I was like, I'm going to put it in a cage at the front of this magic shop and we're going to see if we can work it into the story. And then as you know, the season progressed and I was like, okay, Jeff's going to be the BBEG. Let's find some things that we can tie from what's already been established in our world to tie to Jeff. And that's kind of where Arnold began taking shape as, you know, his father. And like, why is he a bird now? Why does he not trust witches? Oh, the witch was his wife. Why is the wife a witch? Like, what was going on there? And we get Arnold's like true name dropped in like one of the first like five episodes when the guys are randomly talking about it, Bennigans, and Nora's like, oh, you mean Sir Bennigan? It was a complete throwaway line that had zero meaning in that moment. But then as the story of Arnold began to take shape, I was like, yes, we're going to name drop. That is his name. We're going to take that. We're going to go with it. And we're going to like leave these little hints back throughout the story. That was probably my favorite part of the show, was taking Arnold from, you know, this meme that I saw online into a full-fledged character that really had some stakes in the actual story of our show.
Very nice. You've got quite a number of NPCs and unique voices and all of that. You've also had the cast voice NPCs as well. Everybody's been involved in it to some degree. Why did you make that decision? And for the cast members, what was that like for you, voicing part of the story sort of on the DM's side?
I think in a just like a basic answer and a selfish answer, I can't do that many voices. So it's easier for me if I outsource a little bit. But then at the same time, it's as much my story as it is their story.
Yeah.
And I want them to leave an imprint on it. I want them to come into a session and have a chance to, you know, play a goofy, silly character. Like, I'll give them the details that that character needs to know. And then within the confines of that sandbox, let them play as much as they want to. Mm-hmm. And I think it gives, you know, not only in the show, but even if you take this to a tabletop with your friends, it gives everybody at the table ownership of what's happening. And I think that can be a very beautiful thing creatively. And it can also be a very beautiful thing for the team as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew will probably be able to say the most because since he's done the most, especially with Jeff. But just like my little bit that I did was fun in that it was like a improv exercise of sorts, because you're playing this weird thing of I'm also the player and I shouldn't know, you know, the outcome, or I shouldn't know what the motivations of the DM are, but yet right. I'm also going to play this NPC. So it was normally the day of, and Dalton would give you just the most bare bones. Like when I had to be Madalena, it was just like, here's your motivation real quick. You know, she doesn't want to be home. She doesn't like her parents, but if they are convincing enough, you may say yes to them. I'm like, great. And that's all I got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think for at least for me, Jeff was the first NPC I got And that was like episode 4. And Dalton just told me, you know, he's in the caves. We just wanted to introduce Jeff, who was a character from our real life off air campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We just wanted to introduce this fun character to the show. And he just told me, you know, he's here. He's been trapped here and you guys are going to make friends with him and go. And at the time, Dalton had plans for Clark, the bugbear, to be a bigger character.
I did indeed.
And I just, in the moment, was like, I feel like Jeff, he's a wizard, and he's got a chance. He's got backup now in the caves. He's going to throw a fireball. It was just like, I felt like, did I fuck this whole campaign up? Like, was Clark the BBEG? But, you know, so Dalton, that's a positive I want to say about Dalton is that mm-hmm. he lets us help mold and shape the world, much like Clark's pottery.
Much like the pottery.
Oh, very good.
That was nice. Good. That was good.
And he lets us commit to things. He doesn't stop and go, okay, can we redo that? I don't like what you mm-mm. did there. He just goes mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah, full yes and.
Yeah, full yes and. And that extended all the way through the podcast to the finale, the epic finale, and Jeff's destroying things and casting spells. Dalton didn't tell me to do anything or anything like that. It was just, he went with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really fun thing, but also scary because you don't want to derail mm-hmm. what Dalton's planned. But at the same time, it's fun because you know he can handle it.
Yeah.
And Clark's a really interesting one. I don't think you've ever quite been forgiven. just because so many little tidbits about Clark have continued to come up that have made everyone just go, oh, Clark.
But it's so brilliant now if you think about it.
It is.
Like Andrew said, he was just being honest in the moment, but now it works out so perfectly mm-hmm. that he was the BEEG, because I'm like, who could have revealed who he really was? Clark, because he was working for him. He would have been like, oh yeah, that's my boss. And so of course he'd have to kill him immediately if yep. he was trying to gain our trust. And I'm like, oh, it works out so brilliant, and it just kind of happened.
It's yep. almost like Dalton's kind of smart.
Yeah. You know? I guess.
Nobody saw it coming.
Just a little bit.
Not just a chiseled jawline. Or pecs or triceps. Or
I got brains, y'all. I got brains.
Yeah, you do.
Brains and brawn.
So speaking of deceased NPCs, if you could all go back and save one NPC, who would it be? And why would you pick that one?
Clark. Absolutely Clark. We all loved Clark. I disagreed with Jeff's decision to kill Clark. I was pissed. I was yeah. like, but then we did get to make like a fun joke out of his dying, even though it was really sad. I don't know. That kind of fits our dark humor. I feel yeah. like that is kind of who we are.
I would also have to agree with Mike and say Clark. Like Andrew said, I did have plans for Clark. He wasn't mm-hmm. going to quite be the BBEG, but he was going to be, you know, Neznar's right-hand bugbear, essentially. And there would have been a moment down the road where I think he would have been an ally for the team. And he probably would have ended up being my DM PC versus it ended up being Arnold as we got to that mm-hmm. point. We never got that chance because Jeff blew him up. But it's fine. It's fine. It all worked out for the villain storyline and the villain arc. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Mine has to be Arnold.
Yeah.
I wanted so bad for us to find him because we were looking for him for so long. And it's like he almost had an off-screen death, which like it's so tragic because that's real life. You know, you can't always save everyone. And there was nothing we could do at that point, and I was so mad at Dalton. You killed Arnold, you son of a bitch.
Bitch.
And I just, like, because we knew him as a little parrot. He's like, we raised him from a baby, and we turned him into a human bird, man. And he's dead? God.
Andrew, you did have a very clear on-screen special relationship, your character and Arnold. And that did come across. Like the interactions between the two of you were funny, but also sincere, and there was definitely a level of caring there. And that'll lead me into one of my questions, is that even though this is an actual play comedy podcast, it has not been without its moments of intense drama. And I'm just curious what, for each of you, the most emotionally immersive moments have been and what made them so powerful.
Oof. Oh, well, that feels easy for me. Yeah. I had actually told Dalton episodes prior, like probably 5 or 6 episodes prior to it happening, that I was like thinking it would be such a unique moment. And so I was begging him. I was like, at some point, one of the boys needs to die so I can revive them, which sounds very dark. But I was begging him and begging him and begging him. And then he found the perfect moment for it. And yeah, just obviously my real feelings for Mike got to help bring about the feelings for the scene.
Don't act for the podcast.
it's like I like you and stuff. Yeah, gross. So that was a really good moment for me. Because I was really excited to finally get to use Revivify and get to use it in such a unique way. Because I was like, how many people have wedding rings, you know, in Faerun that they can use, like, in that moment? And it's so symbolic. And so that was a really good moment for me.
I'd agree with that. That's one of the tops. Also, when, like, the moment that you got trapped... basically under that grave.
Oh yeah.
That was really intense. That moment didn't last long, like an episode arc, but I had no idea what was going to happen. Like, Dalton doesn't share a lot of stuff with us as far as his plans go, and I had no idea what we were going to do.
A moment that stuck with me, for me, was when we were talking to Razzles, and I realized that Razzles could maybe tell my wife, Laura, that I'm okay. Just because, like, if I was really trapped in another world, I really wouldn't give a shit about myself and my own safety. I would just feel so bad that she thinks I just disappeared and has no answers.
Yeah.
So I really, in that moment, wanted to be able to communicate with her and tell her, I'm alive and I'm okay and I'm going to try my best to come back, just to give her some closure. So that was kind of a very real moment. That one didn't last long either, but I just remember feeling that in the moment, how I would feel in this situation.
Yeah.
For me, probably one of the most intense moments, and there have been a lot on the show, and Mike dying and Alyssa bringing him back is a very, very close second. But the entire flashback sequence where we get to look at Jeff growing up and his interaction with Arnold and, you know, the death of his sister... and the traumatic experience that he went through, building that together with the three of these guys and turning just these ideas and these words on paper into this, you know, sequence of events. I get chills. I told Alyssa, I was like, I have chills during the entire part. And every time I listen back to it, I get those same chills all over again.
Yeah, it was fun to play alongside you to do the husband-wife crying over the kids. Like, that was a really emotional moment.
Yep.
It definitely added a depth to the story, the backstory, and rounded out the picture very well. I like that a lot. Flashback episodes, you also had one right before that went back and took a look at what was happening in the real world with your significant others and your friends. And what was that experience like, roping them into this passion that you've spent so much time on and having them share their voices on the show?
It was a lot of voices at once. A lot of people. For sure. It's trying to wrangle. I feel like me and Dalton were kind of, I was like putting on, because I used to be a stage manager, so I definitely fell into stage manager hat and being like, okay, this is what we need out of you. This is the scene. You ready to go? Mm-hmm. And so because of that, it became a bit more structured than what we normally do, just because we knew there'd be so many voices, so we needed to give everybody a little motivation, a little bit of guide work. It still wasn't scripted in any sense, but we did give them, like, here's the goal of the scene, and then let them go. And probably every scene was probably twice as long as what you heard, because we're just going.
Yeah, not only was it really fun, but it was also very, very special. I mean, Mike and Alyssa married, obviously, or at least that's what they say they are. So they get to share this experience together every single time we record. But for Andrew and I to have the opportunity to bring Laura and Cody in on this, when, you know, we tell them all the time, oh, you know, sorry, can't do that tonight. We have to go record. Or sorry, I have to go record. Got to run upstairs. Got to get on the computer. So to be able to share this creative passion project that they 100% support outside of this. It was a really special moment for us, and to have that and to share that, and for them to come on and absolutely kill it.
Yeah.
I know for Cody, sure. Like, he had a blast. He did so well. I was so proud of him. He played great with Laura, Ashley, and Dustin. And I can't thank all of them enough for, you know, agreeing to come on and help with our silly little show.
Yeah. That's part of my favorite episode, just because it's mostly not us. Mm-hmm. And so I felt sort of like an audience member for the first time hearing it.
Yeah.
And it's a cool thing, because I didn't really ever expect to get a look at what happened since we left. Like, if we're playing this like we were sucked out of the world, of course, we got to find out what happened on Earth as soon as we left. And it was just, I love that we spent a whole episode doing that.
Yeah.
And it just made the whole thing more real and impactful. And it's just fun to listen to. I've listened to that one like 5 times.
It was so fun to edit, because we completely did a different structure. You know, we didn't have Dalton as the narrator, you know, explaining things. Normally I'm listening for him to describe, like this fire blast, you know, example. And I'm going off that to put in sound effects and things like that. But this was truly a scene. These were like truly, I felt like a radio show. It was so fun to be a little more immersive in the sound effects, of really trying to make it seem like you're standing there along with us, actually getting to hear a scene play out.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm just impressed because Dustin and Cody aren't actors. They didn't go to school for this like we did, but yet they had great comedic chops and probably stole the episode.
Yeah.
I think they were one of the best parts of it. So that was really fun to see.
So Laura, Cody, Ashley, and Dustin, they're going to be doing a spin-off series. Can you tell us anything about that? And when will it be on Patreon?
Real Housewives of Faerun.
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome.
They have been aggressive in their requests for this spinoff show. And when Cody asked about it earlier and why it hasn't happened yet, I was like, well, the four of you haven't turned your calendars in yet, so we can't schedule you until you let us know when you're ready. And then his reply to that was that production hasn't reached out to him. So I guess maybe that's on us. But
the Real Dungeon Housewives.
Yeah. I do think it has some legs. And even if it's not a regular installment, I do think some one-offs every once in a while to see what's happening back on Earth while everybody is out and about in the other realms would be a lot of fun.
So season one, looking back on it now, is it anywhere close to what you all envisioned it being in terms of the story and the substance and what it ended up being? How different is the masterpiece that it is from the picture that you originally envisioned?
Oh, God.
I think it's so much better than what I thought it could be. And not that I'm cynical, but I'm a totally cynical person. when we started, I wasn't at the time a podcast guy. I didn't really listen to any actual plays. And I was like, are people going to want to hear this? We're just, you know, we play D&D and that's fun, but is anyone else going to like this? And it just turned into such a good story that I don't know. I didn't realize that a D&D podcast could be like a radio show, you know, like with full production and sound effects and a great story and very real moments. And listening now back to it, it's like 9,000% whatever I thought it could be possibly. And that's honestly mostly on Dalton and Alyssa. Dalton as the creator of this world, Alyssa as the editor in chief. Couldn't be happier with it.
I had to go back and re-listen to some of the early episodes to do the giant recap one, which was a beast to do. Mm-hmm. And listening back, it was like night and day, I felt like. I feel like we've grown so much and we've learned so much, not just for me as an editor and learning different skills editing, but just us working together and interacting with each other, improvising off each other, Dalton creating the story and the structure. Like, we've all just grown so much if you listen to just episodes 1 or 2. And so, yeah, this has surpassed anything I think I could have expected. Because I remember us coming out of episode 1 being like, wow, guys, we did a good job. And now I listen back and I'm like, oh, if only we knew how much growth we would have.
I feel like that's everybody, though. If you listen back to your early stuff, you're just like, this is the most unlistenable piece of shit. And, but then you talk to, like, or you get feedback from people who are listening, and they're like, oh, we love the early episodes. In fact, we think quality has kind of dropped. Like, sometimes it could be the complete inverse of what you expect. I will say what I'm surprised by, because it's just so hard to collaborate with people, is how well we all work together and work with each other, and how much we have each added value to this, like, in our own way.
Fuck you, dude.
I'm really impressed by our team.
Mike never gives compliments.
I don't. I have to say a bunch of bad shit after we wrap, actually, just to get my,
just
eating
out.
Yeah, get my natural ire back.
I'll piggyback off of what Mike said, because I do agree that when you have four strong creative personalities all collaborating on one single project, things run the very high risk of getting a little rocky. And we work very, very well together. I think we respect each other enough to listen to the ideas. And then even if we don't agree with something, we find a common ground to navigate through it while still trying to incorporate the ideas of everyone at the same time. And I think at the end of the day, you know, that's a testament to the friendship that we've shared for the last, you know, decade plus, which is incredible. Most people, you know, aren't lucky enough to say that they have friends like that. So thank you to the three of you for that. But as far as the show being what I expected, absolutely not. And I think I recognize that probably more than they do, because if you look at my notebook for this show, I just have crossed out idea after crossed out idea after crossed out idea, because things take a hard left when I'm expecting them to take a right. And you have to pivot and you have to adapt. You know, that's the beauty of improv. Yes, and just go with the story that, you know, these three co-creators are helping you make. So not what I expected it to be. I do think it's a hell of a lot better than what I probably would have ever been able to plan or imagine. So
awesome. So I would like to make two quick observations before the next question. The first one is, I have to say, of course, props on the story and the sound. The work that goes into the editing and the sound that brings life and like a mental picture to the way that the story is told adds so much to it. And so credit for that. The sound is amazing.
Thank you.
So I wanted to say that as one of my observations. and another one is, with it being an actual play podcast that is different and unique, I would say, to any of them out there, it is one of a kind. And I measure that metric on the fact that I have shared with you every time you've been on my show, is that my wife hates actual play podcasts, and yet she religiously devours yours every time an episode comes out, and she loves it. And that alone, I think, is a testament to how different it is from everything else that's out there. But is there anything that you can all think of that makes it different to you, or anything that you recognize? And is it deliberate? Is that difference deliberate?
It is deliberate. And I'm just going to point out about the sound, because this is what makes it unique.
Sound editor in chief, Alyssa.
Because this is what happened. Because then Dalton does shit like throwing into Transformer just because he feels like it. And I have to find, Tyler, and I kid you not, 12 unique car sounds. Because I didn't want it to just sound like I'm using the same car on repeat that are getting sucked through the portal. I had to find 12 unique sounds. It was just bogging my system down. That last episode, it took forever to edit because my system couldn't handle it. I had like 150 sound effects because of things like that. Because it's the final ending, and everything was being described. I'm like, can we not describe
it's
it like
true.
This?
Looking at her Adobe effects panel, it was like shuddering. There's just too many things going on at once.
At one point, we said the whole car's the whole movie Cars 2 and Alyssa actually found the audio from that movie.
You would never know because I fast forwarded it, so it's just a little bit, but it
we
was
just assign things to Alyssa at this point.
Don't tell
I like
Disney.
Just like slapping in like theme songs from the 80s for sitcoms and stuff. Yeah. Eventually when this goes up on YouTube, which it will soon, look out for that. We're gonna get copyright claimed on a lot of shit.
That side note aside, I just had to throw it out. But yes, it was actually fairly deliberate. I remember when Dalton first came to me with this idea and then we all kind of sat down, we definitely wanted, because like you said, like how some people don't like some actual plays. And I know I'm going to get shit for this, but like I can never get into Critical Role because while I love it and there are some payoffs, like it just is a bit too slow for me to listen to and they're very long. So I remember us pointing out and actually going out and doing research and listening to other actual plays, saying what did we like about them, what we didn't like, and what could we bring to the table to create our best version of what we wanted out of a show, where it was kind of part actual play D&D, but also partially structured and partially cleaned up with the sound effects, with the more immersion to make it more sound like a show. And so I almost see us as a show rather than an actual play, you know, because we found that mix of the two.
I feel like the sound effect thing was a decision really early on because I had this idea for like a modern radio play just kind of boiling in the back of my head for a long time. And then we had this opportunity and I felt like it was just like the perfect marriage. Sound effects plus D&D, you get to create this like soundscape for people to listen to. And if you are, you know, some people would think hampered by being an audio only medium, it's a great solution of putting a picture in people's heads. Plus like the commercial thing, Andrew does a shit ton of those.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, that's a fun little thing, just to add some in-world spice. I think we have a lot of influences, like Dimension 20. But then again, they have like these 2-hour long battle episodes in between their story episodes. And I don't know. I, for one, didn't want that because I feel like that can get tiresome. As great as Dimension 20 is, not everybody wants to listen to 2.5 hours of a battle.
Especially when you're audio only.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's an entirely different beast. I don't know. What do you think, Andrew?
Oh, what do I think? I think, okay, so before this podcast, I wasn't a podcast guy. Now I listen to a shit ton of podcasts, and I love them very much. One thing that I've noticed that's different about us that kind of sets us apart, I think, is that we don't take it so seriously. And that's not even the fact that we're a comedy. There's a lot of comedy D&D podcasts. It's just like we don't give a fuck about the rules. and that is polarizing, I think, for a lot of diehard D&D fans. There's a lot of people who don't like, it's not even that they don't like homebrew, it's that they don't like that we just blatantly say that, fuck this rule, let's change how it works specifically for this moment, because we just want to have a fun show, and if, you know, using Bigby's hand to rip off a unicorn horn is not part of the rules, but it's cool, let's do it. So I think we just embrace the rule of cool. And there's a lot of, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of great actual play podcasts out there with riveting stories, great production value out there. They're valid. They're great. Ours is just, it's just different. And that's fine. And I think that's what makes it fun.
And I always wanted from the get-go our little intro section.
Yeah.
Because I had actually heard that in other shows. Not really, I hadn't really heard them on D&D related podcasts, but in other podcasts, there would always be kind of this little intro bit, getting to hear and learn of getting to actually feel like I get to know them, you know? So I remember coming to Dalton and being like, that would be a really fun implement, which then of course he took and ran with it and added games and added all these fun things. And he definitely made the intros what they are. He always comes to us with all the new ideas. And that's always really fun. I like that our show is kind of part get to know us, kind of watch us be little silly goof people, and then be silly goof people in the story.
Yeah, going off of what Alyssa just said, I truly think that's what sets us apart more so than probably anything else, is the chemistry that the four of us share. And we wanted, with the pre-shows and the intros, we wanted to invite everybody into that. Like, come be friends with us for an hour and a half. Get to really know us, who we are as people, and how we interact with one another, and then come with us on this story that we're going to build together. And I think that's really what has set us apart from everybody else. I know a lot of people, when they listen to the show, they're like, oh, it's like I'm just listening to my four best friends just shoot the shit for an hour. And that's what we want. Mm-hmm. Like, are we playing D&D? Absolutely. But at the same time, we're just hanging out, having a good time.
Yeah, and that is very apparent. And I think to jump off of what Andrew was saying about not giving a fuck about the rules, I'll have to admit, there have been times where a spell has come up or something's come up, and my knee-jerk reaction is, that's not how that works. But then I forget about that as part of the story, because it makes sense in the way that you're playing it, in that it is you're using the spells and the rules as a yes and tool, a way to tell the story and keep the improv going in a fun and unique way that you don't get anywhere else. Because when you are tied to the way that the rules work, you're obviously tied to the story functioning in a certain way. And I think you've, by embracing the rule of cool, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You've done something really unique and made it fun for people who don't enjoy listening to D&D to be able to enjoy listening to your show, even though it has D&D at its center. So props.
We have
props
a lot of fans.
Thank you.
Friends from college and even my wife, who doesn't have no interest in D&D whatsoever. They may have listened to an episode or two, you know, to be nice, but now they're super fans. Like, not to throw my wife under the bus, but when we first started, she was like, do I have to listen to this D&D podcast? And I was like, you don't. You genuinely don't have to. But she tried it, and now she loves it. And that's not just because she's married to me. It's because I tell her, if she doesn't fucking listen.
No, that is a fair point, because my wife listens to your guys' show, but she definitely doesn't listen to my show. It's way too D&D.
Oh, God.
No.
It's all good. It's all good.
So, can't take it personally, yeah.
I've got two more big questions for you.
Okay.
The first one being, looking back on season one, this one's primarily for you, Dalton, but everyone I'm sure has something to give input on this for. Are there any details, any moments that you wish you could have explored more?
Ooh.
There's a lot. obviously, Clark had a whole storyline. The Castle Vander arc, they had a whole storyline. But we were so close to Christmas, I was like, fuck it, let's go do a Christmas special for four episodes and forget about the Castle Vanders. They had a whole, you know, arc. There's backstory between Nesnar and the Corpheus, and Corpheus the dragon that never got explored. There is backstory with the wizard that was cloning himself in the castle that they went to after the swamp. There was backstory there that never got explored. There's just a lot of detail that I have notes for and that I was planning on weaving into the plot that we just never got the chance to do. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that the choices that the three of these guys made took us to other points in the story that, you know, we had more fun with. So it's not that they're never going to see the light of day ever again. They're just going to get maybe repackaged, repurposed, and we will see them come up in later seasons.
Yeah, the classic DM problem, where you got all this stuff prepped and then your players go the other direction.
Yep.
You're like, cool. So glad I took so many notes and plans.
And Dalton's the type to write like a 150-page manifesto on the wizard that cloned himself, which, by the way, I don't even remember that, but that sounds cool. I would like to investigate that more, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when we ignore Dalton's plans, we're just like destroying a novella that nobody will ever read.
Tragic.
Just sits on my hard drive, never to see the light of day, with all of the characters that I have rolled up that I will never get to play.
Because I wanted to know more about the Castle Vanders, and then we came back from Christmas, and he's like, nope, the orphans you released took care of it. Which, good on those orphans, you know?
It made for an epic end to their saga, though.
That's true. Yeah.
They took up
arms. Took over the town.
Yeah.
They run the town now.
Yeah.
I, for one, wanted a part 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of the Christmas arc, but you know, you give and take.
So did everybody.
More, what was his name? Thorpe?
Thorpe.
Who knows?
Who knows? The elf.
You definitely see downloads go down during that and then swing back up. Rightly so.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Well, I mean, we were looking at like end of January when we were getting done with Christmas for you guys, right? It was
we were.
It was
January.
We were.
April. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
And people are like, we're over Christmas. Yeah. Just skip ahead. Also, I wonder if people, because we labeled them like the Christmas special, I wonder if people thought they were like unrelated.
Separate, yeah.
When really they were.
Are. I mean, they are. They are. It was a standalone story.
But they're fun. We got the rubies from that episode.
Yeah
it's true.
It's true.
It's true.
And I have to say that the Christmas episodes had one of the scenes that gave me some fear. Some fear-inducing moments. The Jack-in-the-Box scene. Jack-in-the-Box is terrifying me in the way you were describing them in that moment. I was just like, I don't know if I can listen to this part. I mean, I am having some serious palpitations here.
Well, we recorded that episode 4 times.
Yeah, I think so.
4 times, I think, because of audio issues. The first time it happened and the subsequent times, it scared the shit out of me. Because I think Dalton tried a different voice every time.
And we kind of played it out in a different way every time, too, which was fun.
Yeah.
Well, I also want to say the first time we recorded it, the Jack in the Box was friendly. I think the first time we did it, it was a friendly Jack in the Box.
Oh, but I didn't trust that he was.
Well, Alyssa was so scared that it wouldn't be. And then you kind of took that as a cue, like, oh, yeah, this should
be. He was too friendly. I was like,
he's just alone in the room? Who left him alone unless he's
laughing and smiling?
Alone in a room?
I think it just lives in people's nightmares, as it should. Like, I have no shame in admitting that. It is just a terrifying thing designed to frighten you. That is literally the purpose of the toy.
Literally the purpose. It's teaching children fear early on.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you're never going to get what you expect when you expect it, and when you least expect something, it's going to jump out and scare the fuck out of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Let's give more of those to children. So obviously the Castle Vander storyline, you mentioned that while you were just chatting. You, Dalton, I assume you had a lot more written for that before the children took over.
So the Castle Vanders was going to originally be what the Swamp Witch was. Not necessarily with it being Jeff's mom. This was also kind of before Jeff was who he was and who Arnold was, who Arnold ended up being. But they were going to be like the next like minor big baddie that the crew needed to overcome before heading into the Yawning Portal and then down into Undermountain, which also never fucking happened.
Never happened.
I had complete plans for them to go to the Yawning Portal to meet Durnan and all that good stuff too, and that also never happened. So, but yeah, the Castle Vanders were going to play like a minor bad guy role with their child labor and their mining operation, and the rubies were going to come from the mines, and it was a whole thing, but we never got to see it.
Which only proves how much of our show is just improv, because if we had structured this better, we would not have all these little like plot devices just discarded off to the side. Because I've had friends ask that, because like you said, we have friends who know nothing of D&D and who come in and they're like, but why would you even mention it? Why would you mention the Castle Vanders and then just drop it? I'm like, that's
for fun.
That's D&D, babe.
Just to piss you off is why.
We moved on. Yeah.
I do love how there was a big plot point for a while of we got to make 10 gold so that we can go down into Undermountain. And then
and then that went nowhere.
That got derailed.
And then we made like hundreds of gold.
You had so much. Yeah. You could have gone up and down so many times.
Yeah.
And at no point we're like, should we go back? Should we find that?
I know. Yeah. It's just, we'll leave that one there. We've got more important things to do now. Before my last big question, I'm going to share with you a moment that had me spit my drink out in laughter.
Oh, boy.
I was foolish enough to take a drink at the same moment that Mike proclaimed he was drinking piss and then took another drink to be sure. That
was like, stop drinking.
The
it.
Way that that moment played was so good that you just went with it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Dalton basically came up with. Did you come up with this game, Dalton, or is it in like a DMG?
Okay. No, yeah, I came up
like,
with it.
I don't think anything don't think would be printed. not in the DMG, but in like, you know, a campaign book. I didn't think it would be. But yeah, when Dalton said that, I was like, well, obviously I'm drinking piss, right? But it was up to Dalton in the end. And I was like, well, if I'm going to drink piss, I'm going to do what nobody expects. And I'm going to drink all of this fucking piss. I was just doing the comedy math. I was like, that's pretty funny. And I think I pretty much steamrolled that entire episode with all of my dumb bullshit.
Worth it.
Yeah.
That was a good one. So with that... behind the scenes, favorite moments, or just something cool that happened off screen that you could share with everyone?
Ooh.
It's not necessarily a like aha funny comedy moment, but a really cool behind the scenes moment is typically I keep these guys out of the gameplay when it comes to where the episode goes, how to structure it, what's going to happen. But for the finale, we all came together, and those last like four to five episodes, we all kind of co-created as we went. And that's probably the only time in the entire show that we kind of, you know, messed around with a couple of ideas, messed around with a couple of things, and decided like what sounded better, what stuck more, because it was the finale, and we wanted to make sure it was going to be as impactful as it possibly could. So it was really cool and a lot of fun for the four of us to just kind of come together and brainstorm on this like kind of perfect ending while still leaving, you know, plenty of room for the chaos that always ensues when we record.
Yes, I remember the final scene. I literally went invisible and then I was telling Dalton, I was like, please, please, please let it get back to me. Please don't let the big thing happen. Don't let the scene end. Get back to me because I have something cool to do. And because I just really wanted to stab him. And so that was that kind of back and forth we were doing that like Dalton said.
I like the moments where sometimes we have audio issues and we re-record. I remember there was in the piss drinking episode. That's a re-record because the first time we did it, I convinced... what's her name? The
Jolly.
What's the dwarf? What's her name?
Jolly.
Jolly. I convinced Jolly not to test us for a job by stealing the alcohol. I convinced her that we were stealthy and we were not going to go to the library at all to do her little test. So, but there were audio issues. So we went back to re-record and I tried... like an idiot, I metagamed and I tried the same method. Steal the bottle, convince her I'm stealthy. But this time, Dalton, as Jolly, said, no, you still have to do the test. And to me, that was just, it keeps us on our toes. I have to say Mike's bit in that is probably the funniest moment, drinking the piss, where he keeps drinking it after the game's over. He's like, if I have to drink it, I will. I don't think that happened the first time we recorded, and so I'm so glad we did.
Sometimes you find stuff in the moment.
Yeah.
Honestly, the audio issues were a problem for like, I don't know, what, 5-6 episodes we just had to re-record?
Honestly, it was thanks to
early
you.
Early on.
Because you introduced us to Riverside, and that helped us a lot. We were going so old school, and we were just truly calling each other on Zoom.
True.
And yeah, I think even our very first episode, that was a complete re-record because we were completely new to doing this. We also didn't think the energy was good. And then
we felt off, but the audio was the, like, okay, the audio is bad. We have to re-record. Yeah, but honestly,
it's for the better because we were so boring. Like, we were, again, trying our hand at this. It was the very first episode, trying it out.
I think we took it seriously. Like, pretty seriously.
It makes sense. Every pilot episode of a TV show, people don't know their energies yet. People don't know what they'll be. And we are still trying to find that out. And so when we re-recorded, we were making the funnier choices, like Andrew going into the horse. That didn't happen at all. Things like that. Me getting shot. Us sniffing for Dalton. Like, nothing. Literally, the whole episode is completely different. Yeah. It was a much more boring version. And I'm so glad we did that because I think it finally kind of helped us.
It set the stage.
Yeah, it set the stage and find where we were going to be. And like you said, what our roles would be within the show. Thank God for those audio problems that helped us find our energy.
Sure. I think one of my favorite moments is in that same episode. You you try to play like the masked guy or the hooded guy in the tavern that's all mysterious, and you walk around.
The piss episode, yeah.
Yes!
You're like, I'm brooding, but mysterious.
Right. I was really hoping that you would just bring back a brooding, you know, alter ego, mysterious alter ego throughout the series, but we found other bits. Sometimes bits die in the episode, and for sure. You know, we don't return to them. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, though, I think, like, my favorite moments are when I get to play with Dalton, because I get to joke around with these guys all the time, right? Because we're interacting mostly with each other, and when we're going to Dalton, it's always for, like, questions, DM stuff. Mm-hmm. But some of the most fun and some of the most memorable moments for my money are when Dalton and I get to, like, play around. Like Lumpcheck. Yeah, or the Salamanders. Yeah, those are all great moments that we just came up with in the moment, just because, mm-hmm. you know, I was like, let me go into this shop. And I kick open a door.
Let me kick a door down.
Like an asshole. And Dalton has to create a new guy for me to just have fun with, which is awesome. I think those are really fun moments.
Yeah, that was a pretty great moment. Just, what are you doing? This is my place of business. I think a lot of times people who have played a lot of D&D, they glaze over a lot of the ridiculous things that players might do in a game, mm-hmm. just to keep a story a little more serious. But I think one of the beautiful things about comedy and that you've been able to do on your show is you can react to those things a lot more grandiose. You know, you can play them up a lot more and really embrace what it's like when people are being a little bit wild and a little bit crazy. And I think that does add flavor to the comedy.
Absolutely.
Get to call people out. Like, why are you acting the way you are? Hey.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And to make a joke of it, like just to draw attention to the fact that we're being ridiculous right now, because it does happen in regular D&D. Everybody does ridiculous stuff. You just don't always get called out on it.
Right.
All right, my last big question. Season 2. What can you tell us, if anything? When's it coming around the corner? What can we expect? Ooh. Is there a redemption arc for Jeff in the works? What tantalizing tidbits can you give us?
Season 2 is happening.
And that's it.
We got greenlit. Fox is interested.
By ourselves.
Yeah, no, season 2 is happening. We are going to take a break. We haven't completely decided how long the break's going to be, but we're thinking probably end of summer, beginning of early fall of this year, season 2 will be making its grand debut. We have a lot of ideas for what we want to see happen. And where we want to see it happen, I think it will be out of this world when it comes out and drops.
The main feed will take a break from getting new episodes, but we also want to keep pushing stuff on the Patreon even during the break. Mm-hmm. But we will be re-recording and backlogging and such and planning and all that stuff.
Yes, and just to plug that, if you're liking the show and you want to hear even better sound effects, the paid sound effects, join us on Patreon so Alyssa can afford those paid sound effects. Because all this you've been hearing, this is free. The no copyright stuff that I'm finding online.
Royalty free.
Yeah.
For the most part.
As a paid Patreon member myself, if you're not on there, you guys have got to listen to the JeffCast episodes. They're incredible.
The JeffCast.
They have provided hours of entertainment around my table and lots of hate for my players.
And if you like, you know, bonus content, we're also planning on dropping a Silver Plate Let's Play. If you haven't heard of that, Google it. It's pretty cool. Awesome Kickstarter that launched a couple of years ago that I think just got released into print. Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun for people to try at home.
Yeah, that's something we're definitely exploring for the Patreon, is doing a couple more one-shots, a couple more fun things off to the side. Maybe finding our own version of JeffCast that will relate to season 2, you know, adding a lot more there. We'll just have to see, you'll have to see to find out.
We'll have to see.
Mm-hmm.
All right, as we officially bring season one to a close, I want to thank Robert again for hosting this breakdown for us. Robert, where can the audience find you at home? What kind of projects do you have in the works? Talk to us about what's going
Absolutely. On. Absolutely. So you can find my show on any streaming platform, any podcast platform. You can find me directly on Instagram at Dungeons_Dragons_Psychology. And you can always reach out to me by email if you just want to chat at DungeonsDragonsPsychology@gmail.com. I am in season 3 of my show right now. It's coming out a little bit slower than season 2 and season 1 because I am in the middle of my PhD program. Woo. But we're doing a really fun thing right now where we are talking about leveling up as D&D classes in real life. And so that is the next like 12 episodes are all going to be focused on how can you be a fighter? How can you embody the skills of a bard and incorporate that into your real daily life and just getting into the psychology of dopamine release and basically gamifying becoming a better person in your own life.
Hell yeah.
I love
okay,
that.
That yeah, sounds cool.
Just to
fun.
Gas Robert up a bit, you guys, yeah. If you guys are D&D, especially if you're DMs or even if you're just a writer, Robert's podcast is awesome too. I mean, he just said he's getting a PhD, this guy. Okay, yeah. He's an intellectual. He's going to inspire you to up your game as a DM, as a writer, as a world builder. He's got so many great episodes that have inspired me personally, and you guys have to check him out. It's really great. This guy is a genius, and I don't think we should be, like, I feel like he's above us. You know what I mean? Like, I'm surprised he's here in this room right now with the riffraff.
I mean, absolutely.
You know? Master yeah. Robert Walker for now.
Master.
Well, master for now.
Do people have to call you that, Master?
Mm-hmm.
Master
no, Walker. No, no, no. I mean, I should.
If not, you should
I
make
should
call you
embrace that.
That
and just like, yeah, you can't add that to your your driver's license or anything like you can with doctor. But you know, in my personal life, I think I should.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you again for coming on the show tonight and running us through this breakdown. We appreciate it very, very much. And we're super excited about season 3 of your show and also want to wish you as much luck as possible in your
yes.
PhD program. We also want to thank the audience at home one more time and our loyal fans over at Patreon. If you want to count yourselves among this elite, then head on over to www.patreon.com/dungeonradiohour and join in on all of the fun. You're going to gain access to bonus content that we've been talking about tonight, like Jeffcast, bloopers, extended intros, DM notes, special episodes, and side projects like the Silver Plate campaign that Mike was talking about. All of these things that we're going to be working on during our break while we are recording and backlogging for season 2. Speaking of season 2, mark your calendars now for later this fall when it will drop. And keep an eye out on all of our socials for updates and announcements as we go through our break. We can't wait to share what we have planned. Until then, keep the volume up, the dial tuned in, and always say yes to adventure.
Bye for now, kids.
Bye for now, kids.
Bye for now.
I got to say it too.
You said it too.
Kids.
I want to say bye for now, kids.
Are there kids out there? I hope
I
not.
Don't think any kids should
Robert,
be listening
throw one in
to this.
There.
Yeah, kids should not be listening to the show. That's all I'm going to say.
Really
and that's Dr. That's all pending right. Dr. Robert Walker.
That's a master.
That's Master Robert Hell Walker.
Yeah. Hey, Game Masters.
Are you sick of cliche stories that leave your players falling asleep?
Do you suffer from low engagement at your gaming table?
Do you struggle with creating interesting plots and engaging NPCs?
Do your players laugh at your tiny dice rolls?
Well, we can't help you with that one. But we can help you level up your gaming. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Josh.
We discuss the topics that matter the most when you're being a GM.
Be that better map design, telling gripping mysteries, or just not killing off your players in an adversarial way. I mean, yeah.
Join us at Level Up Your Gaming, a tabletop RPG podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.